Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank for another edition of the podcast. This week we are riding high off the back of Sale's 24 points to 16 victory over Harlequins at the Stoop on Sunday afternoon, which means Sale are now looking very pretty, sat in second, and have been able to put some proper distance between themselves and Harlequins, who have remained third for the time being. My name is Lewis. And joining me is my co-host, Alex. Alex, your thoughts to regular Shark Tank listeners about Harlequins is quite well known, I think, at this point. So I imagine you're on a bit of a high this week, having beaten Harlequins at their home ground in such a convincing fashion.
Yeah, the satisfaction is very high, I'll be honest. Watching Gus Waugh put Danny Kerr in his pocket and leave him there for 80 minutes is... one of the better things. Yeah, and to be fair, that's because Danny Kerr is such a good player and in such good form and always plays so well against us, which is a nightmare. That, you know, I went into this game thinking, okay, well, Danny Kerr's starting, so they're going to win this. And, you know, we'll put up a good fight, but I was probably convinced it was Quinns by a few. And then the conditions, I thought Quinns are playing this better than us. They look, you know, they're... these little kicks in behind, the kicking game is going to be massive, the errors are going to be crucial, and for the first 10 minutes, I think they were the better side. And what's great about this Sale team is that they realised that, and they went away and they fixed it, and then that was it. That was, you know, from thereafter, we were on top for pretty much the whole game, and I think that adaptability to the conditions, and horrendous conditions, and it obviously suited our natural game better than it suits Quinn's natural game, but nevertheless, you know, I think we were by far the better team for the rest of the game. So it was just an outstanding performance in difficult conditions away from home, silenced the Stoop. Yeah, very, very satisfying. And I think all the more satisfying because of where it leaves the table. Because, you know, had that result gone the other way, we're dragged down into a battle for second, third, maybe even fourth. With it going this way, as you say, we've put some real good distance between us. We're going to 2 weeks in Europe. And then we'll come back into the league. And you know, we've not got the easiest running in the world, but also we've, you know, got a few hard games out of the way, and Harlequins away is one of those. So, yeah, I think we should be full of every confidence going into the back half of the season and keeping up this momentum. So what a weekend.
Yeah, what a weekend indeed. And I don't know where you kind of want to start with this one, because I think for me it's the something you touched upon that's the most impressive manner in this victory, which is that kind of adaptability. You know, very poor conditions on the day. Obviously, you saw lots of images of players skidding around up with the wet weather. You know, but it's the fact that, you know, the first 10, 15 minutes game isn't necessarily going our way. But we continually, and this has been a trend this year, are finding ways to adapt to whether it's the conditions or the playing styles or whatever. And we've got so much talent in this team now that we can beat teams in a myriad of ways. And, you know, I think this result and this performance is a great indicator of that, because we had a trial for a set piece move, you know, for Tom McFlaherty's try. We had a nice bit of sort of improvisation off the back of some scrappy play in the Quinns 22, where Sam James obviously gets the ball on first phase again after the Curry turnover, puts a little kick in behind for his number 10 to scamper over. You know, we saw, you know, a couple of rolling ball tries. We saw tries where, you know, our forwards are winning the collisions, you know, over the try line. It was just such a sort of well-varied performance, which I think is probably a testament to just how well-rounded the Sale team is at the moment. And I guess, you know, from your perspective, Alex, what was it that Quinns just couldn't sort of cope with, that, you know, that led to us winning, you know, admittedly quite comfortably at the end?
I think our power and what was so good was the accuracy along with that power. So, I mean, part of this is the kicking game, which I think was excellent, and the sort of defensive kicking game. So, you know, we were taking high balls really, really well and not making too many errors. But I think when we did attack, and this is what Quinns couldn't do, is the reason we found those spaces, so the reason we found the space on the Tomo Fati try is because we tied in enough defenders on the inside. And I think that's just the most impressive thing, that we've got these really big, powerful players, you know, Jean-Luc Dupree, Joachim van der Merwe, obviously with more explosive power, the Currys. But what you were seeing was these sort of little tip-off passes, and they were sticking to hand. And, you know, that is something that didn't used to happen, that kind of accuracy at pace that we saw on Sunday. Because in the old days, that would have, you know, maybe a couple of phases, yeah, and then we'd have dropped it, and or, you know, we made an error, pass it forward, someone would have got in the way. And what you're seeing now is a team high on confidence, clearly well coached, but clearly enjoying their rugby as well, and just being brave with what they're doing. You know, it's brave to play that style of rugby in those conditions, but they're executing it really well. And I think that just gave us such momentum, and you could see that we could get over the gain line quite easily against Quins through the forwards. And then when we needed to move it out the back, obviously there were some really lovely touches which kind of sealed the tries, I suppose. And that's another point. You know, you look at that Tomo Fati try, it's Sam James to Aaron Reid, and that choice in from Sam James, I don't know whether that was like preconceived or not, I should say. But the choice to go to Aaron Reid rather than Rob Dupree, and Rob Dupree was obviously the one that Joe Marchant bites in on, is absolutely brilliant. But then the quick hands from Aaron Reid are outstanding as well. You know, slippy ball under pressure. You know, it's not the best pass in the world, but he gets it away, and that's the crucial thing. And then Luke James obviously shows his pace and does a lovely step as he catches the ball that you know, cements the space, I suppose. And I think that was kind of the theme throughout the game. You know, you look at Sam James, it's just an inch-perfect kick with Rob Dupree running through. It's those things that I think, you know, 2 years ago we were doing but not quite executing as well, that we seem to be doing now. And we used to say all the time, we are 5% away from being a good team. You know, we're 95% there, we're playing the right way, we've got really good qualities all over the field, but we just never quite seem to find that. And I think that's what we did on Sunday. We found that little extra percentage that made the difference. Because if you look at our tries, any one of them could have gone wrong. Yeah, and they were close to going wrong. You know, the Sam James kick, if it's a bit shorter, then there's covering defence. The Aaron Reid pass is like a millimetre off being forward. The stuff like that, I think, was really crucial. So it's massively encouraging as a sale fan. It's obviously very exciting. But I think we've got to be really positive about that. And then you look at the other side of the coin, and Quins couldn't get through our defence, which is also excellent. Obviously, conceded the try right at the end, the Nick David one. But before that, you know, we were pushing them backwards again, which we do to teams. You know, they try and attack and they lose 20, 30 metres in a couple of phases. So I think obviously that is a massive factor as well and can't be overlooked. But I think the thing that really won us the game and certainly got us the bonus point was that execution at high, high pace. I genuinely think it's brave. I think it's really brave play, because we could have just gone, right, okay, we'll kick every time. And fair play, we got into the right areas, got into territory, and then we started playing bravely. So, no, massively encouraging. What were your thoughts? Did you think that? Think the same. Anything else you thought that we did really well on Sunday that won us the game?
I mean, you are right. It's the defence, and you actually look at the table at the moment, and we've conceded 232 points, which is 36 fewer than the second place team. So we've got the best defence in the league by far, and the fact is, like you said, you know, we didn't necessarily, you know, fire on all cylinders. You know, kicking a goal, for example, wasn't necessarily at its strongest. You know, and we were in a bit of a dogfight for large parts of the game, which is understandable given the conditions. But it's the fact that, you know, they get their second trial or whatever it was, you know, very late on in the game at a point when we were already 13 points ahead. And that only just about gets them in touching distance. It's things like that which really kind of help kill the games off. And it's why we've been so successful this year, which is we're starting to score more points. And to your point, the, you know, those grubber kicks through, you know, the set plays, they're all starting to stick, which I think is obviously a testament to the changes in the coaching staff, like we spoke a little bit about last week, and also obviously having a higher level of talent in the squad. But I think the other thing is we're scoring more tries and we're continuing to be airtight defensively. And we always said that, you know, that this is a winning combination. If you can score, you know, 25 points a game and only concede 15, you're going to win more games than you lose. And, you know, look at how the table is shaking out this year. We're second. We've won 9 and lost 3. So we've developed a formula over the last probably 18 months or so for how we can beat teams, kind of regardless of the level of talent in them. And I think this Quins game is a testament to that, because we beat them away last year. You know, we beat them away this year. But two or three years ago, we weren't necessarily winning that. And I think it's just a testament to how this team has got a very strict, a very rigid foundation that's now being sort of curated a little bit more. And I think a lot of the things that we're starting to see, especially with that ambition and, like you said, playing accurately at pace, is a reflection of kind of how far this team has come, and where we are on the table at the moment is a reflection of just how good that makes us compared to the rest of the league. I was, you know, admittedly a little bit disappointed by Quins. You know, as I mentioned on last week's pod, they're really sort of struggling to fire a little bit at the moment. You did see that, but obviously it doesn't help when you've got quite a suffocating defence from a cell perspective. But the other thing I wanted to mention is just the depth in the squad that we've got at the moment. We spoke a little bit about Joe Simpson last week and obviously how it was going to put more pressure on Gus Waugh to perform, who's been performing very well, but you know, he now doesn't necessarily have an experienced backup behind him. And you saw at the weekend, you know, he plays the majority of minutes because it's Nye Thomas on the bench, who's only had a handful of appearances at the top level so far. You know, I thought he had a fantastic game, but you know, he had a fantastic game for the entire time he was on the pitch, and that makes such a massive difference when you can go to your arguably third choice scrum half coming into the season and match him up against one of the best scrum halves to play the game in the modern era in Danny Kerr, and comprehensively outplaying, but also outplaying for the entire game. You know, I think that's such a testament to the squad that's built. Simon McIntyre, who I know a few listeners pointed out, haven't really touched upon too much. You know, again, he had an incredibly strong showing for 50 odd minutes, and has developed kind of out of the blue into our starting loose head. You know, Cobus Visa, a great example. He hit 50 appearances for Sale at the weekend in the Premiership, and his consistency and his dependability at lock, especially whilst a lot of the players around him have been moving. You know, obviously Johnny Hill's been away with England and come back in. The Dupreez have sort of moved around a little bit with injuries. Visa's just been a rock for this team. And you see it in games like this where conditions are a bit poor and you need just a high skill level to be able to beat opponents. That sort of 1 through 23 at the moment, we do seem to have that in the team. And that's the really, really encouraging thing, especially when, for example, Luke James has come back from an injury and is in, you know, sterling form. Sam James is in the form of his life. And then you can bring a guy like Joe Carpenter off the bench. I know he had two appearances off the bench due to a HIA for Luke James. You know, he comes on, first thing he does, chases an up and under, wins it in the air and sets us up for an attacking opportunity. Like, it's just, we are firing on all cylinders at the moment. And I think it's really important to kind of stress that it's not just Sam James with a couple of try assists, or Tom O'Flaherty scoring those tries. It's, you know, the players 1 through 23 who I think are just really performing impressively at the moment. Who stood out for you then on the day? Because obviously I know we've just mentioned it's a team effort and the entire team is playing well at the moment. But who particularly caught the eye?
Yeah, I think we talked about it earlier, but Gus Waugh was absolutely outstanding. In a game where the tactical kicking was so important, I think his was excellent. And he just his game awareness seems to have got better and better over the season. You know, these kicks that he puts in where he finds touch, you know, the low kick that flies along the ground and rolls in touch on or near the 22. He just sees space so well. It's really impressive, that rugby kind of brain, that intelligence. Speaking of rugby intelligence, Sam James, I thought, again, had a really, really good game. Obviously, creates the Rob Dupree try, important role in the Tom O'Flaherty try. And I think you spoke about them, but our 15 options now, going from a couple of years ago when we basically said we need to sign Simon Hammersley, otherwise we haven't got a 15. We've now got Luke James playing absolutely out of his skin, and Joe Carpenter looking like he's been playing in the Premiership for 5-10 years when he's, you know, played about 7 games. I thought they were both excellent. Luke James, I just love Luke James's sort of hidden running ability. You know, people, he gets the ball and you think, or people would think, he's not that fast. He's not going to get through the gap. He's just going to, you know, sort of chuck it back up. And he's just got this elusive pace and a way of finding gaps that works really well. And then also in the forwards, obviously the forwards were the best bit about it, but Ben Curry had a superb game, as we know. He got man of the match, I think, on the BT Sport, didn't he? And Johnny Hill, one of his best performances in the South Shore. I don't know whether the conditions suited him, but he just seemed to be everywhere and be annoying, and in the most annoying way that Johnny Hill can be. He was, you know, I think, getting over Maules, he was turning over, just every little thing that could wind people up. And Gus Ward did the same. He sort of, you know, was just in people's faces and being as annoying as Quinns usually are to us, to be fair. So that was really good to see. And then, yeah, we got pulled up for it last week, probably rightly, actually, that Simon McIntyre didn't get enough mention on the pod. And he, again, backed up last week with a superb performance this week. You are right. You know, for a guy who, and I think someone pointed this out to us on Twitter, so I can't remember who I need to credit for this, but for a guy who we signed as effectively a one-year cover, that kind of, you know, we thought, yeah, he'll cover one. We've obviously got Ben Rod coming through. He is just performing at a level that I don't think we ever expected him to, being almost brutally honest, but not, you know, I think
that's fair, though, because
we knew he had that capability 5 years ago in the, you know, prime of his career, but we didn't think we were getting that, I don't think, did we?
No, well, we signed Simon McIntyre, who was a rotation player at Wasps at the age of, I think he was in his age 29 season when we signed him, or was going into his age 30 season. I know props have different age curves, but, you know, at that point, you're like, this is a squad player. Right? This is someone who's going to come in and supplement the squad depth and provide cover for Bevan Rod. But you're right, he's ran with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're seeing, actually, in our squad, just on a more general note, is that we're full of those kind of gold dust players who don't seem to get to international level quite, but are performing week in, week out of Premiership. And I think that's coming together now. Because if you look at that team on Sunday, and just to go through it quickly, Simon McIntyre won't be playing for England. Aka van der Merwe won't be playing for South Africa. Nick Shonat won't be playing for South Africa or England. Johnny Hill obviously goes away with England. But Cobus Visa probably not in and around South Africa at the moment. Ben Curry's not around England. Obviously, Tom Curry is. But we bring on Johnny Ross 10 minutes in anyway. A slightly worrying injury for Tom Curry, probably the only negative of the weekend. Jean-Luc Dupree, the same, you know, in the South Africa conversation, but not getting picked. Gus War, Rob Dupree, obviously Manu gets picked for England. Sam James, Aaron Reid, Tommy Flatty, Luke James, Joe Carpenter at fullback. So if you think about all those players, at the moment, it's sort of like that Exeter team of about 5 years ago when they just had all these great players and none of them were getting picked for England because Saracens were the England setup. And so they just, you know, obviously they then got a few picked for England, which I think will happen to us. You know, I think Tom Roebuck is in the conversation. Obviously Manu is always in the conversation. Rafi will be in the conversation. So there's players who will naturally kind of move into that international sphere rather than the club sphere, but the kind of backbone of the team and the heart of the team is is Sale players who, you know, may get a call up once in a while, but they're not established regular internationals. And I think that's the other crucial bit, that Gus Warren and Rob Dupree, who aren't, as far as we know, going to get called up for their respective countries, are sort of turning into the heartbeat of this team. And I think it genuinely raises real questions about when George Ford is back and when Rafi is back, who plays? Because at the moment, in the nicest way possible, unless one of Gus or Rob gets injured, we actually don't need them. you know, if George Ford goes off with England for the Six Nations, as he's rumoured, not the end of the world by any stretch, is it? Because Gus and Rob have got a brilliant understanding and are playing superbly well. And I think once you stop that, and once you sort of bring in those rotational subs, or, you know, they might not play the whole game, or they might not play a game 1 week to the next, that disrupts the flow, doesn't it? And that disrupts the rhythm and the rhythm of the heart of the team, so to speak. So I think it's a really interesting decision for Al Sanderson. But I just, you know, I basically went, you asked me who impressed me most, and I went through the whole squad, which I was sort of trying to avoid, but hopefully I did pull out a few names. But I think it's that crucial point of, these are players who are really, really high-level Premiership performers, who are able to perform in the Premiership week in, week out, because they're not getting selected at international level, and they don't need those rest periods associated with it, that mean that's kind of the key ingredient to our success this season, I think. And long may it continue. And obviously, with a strong academy, it should. So hopefully, as we, you know, continue to have that luxury of being able to bring in the academy players when we can afford to, then this sets us up going into the future. So it's bloody exciting, isn't it?
I'd love that comparison you made with the Exeter team of a couple of years ago, because you are right. Like, that team, you know, had, you know, the Simmons brothers who weren't getting picked for England. You obviously had like Johnny Hill, whose international career was just starting, you know, just massive lumps up front, you know, in the front row. But then you'd have like, you know, Jack Vermeulen, Yanis Kirsten, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all these, this really nice blend of kind of like skilled, experienced players who aren't necessarily going to be missing 6 months out of the year. And Exeter were able to build on that to become a title-winning team, and obviously ultimately won a European competition as well. So I really like that comparison, because you're right. Like, Gus Ward's never going to play for England, you know, rightly or wrongly. You know, it's just not he doesn't necessarily have the kind of top-end skills in any one particular area that's going to make him a standout for a test squad. But he's such a well-rounded player, and he does everything so well, or so competently, that he's a fantastic Premiership-level player. You argue maybe the same is the case for Sam James. But if you've got a team full of those players, you know, you're going to be a top-end Premiership team like we are. But as Exeter showed, you can actually be a bit more than that. And I think that's the really exciting thing. One bit of controversy, I suppose you could say, like, did come out of the game, though, is the Manu Tuilagi hit. So for those of you who haven't seen it, there's an up-and-under. Tommy Allen, the Harlequins fly half, goes to catch it. He spills the ball out of his hands. He goes to try and regather it whilst he's in the air and sort of lurches forward. Manu is primed to make a massive hit on him, and he has to pull out at the last second. But when both players are quite low to the ground, there's clear contact between Tuilagi and Tommy Allen's head. In my opinion, it was refereed very well, which betrays kind of what I thought about it, in that there was no there was no sanction on the field and nothing was the back of it. But I know obviously it set Twitter ablaze a little bit for people looking to maybe put a spanner in those pesky Sale fans' optimism. So, Alex, I mean, where do you stand on this one? Because it did get a lot of people talking, especially around, as we continue to talk a lot around head contact and player safety and welfare in the modern game.
Yeah, I replied to a tweet about it, and then it swiftly deleted my reply and just muted the tweet, because I was thought, I'm not getting into this on Twitter. It's only going to cause me pain. So I think, let's be clear, we're not a old school, you know, let's just let the boys whack each other's heads off podcast. So, you know, we acknowledge the importance of this issue and how you can see in the, obviously, I think me and you especially, quite into American football and seeing the kind of impact that the concussion story has had there. I think we need to be massively aware of it. I agree with you, as I would as a Sale fan, but also as a rugby fan, because the point this is what I tweeted before I deleted it and thought I'm not getting involved. How much lower can Tuilagi get? If you freeze the impact at the point of contact, Tommy Alonga is on his knees, so has naturally lost, you know, a foot and a half of height. And Tuilagi is bent at the waist. He's right down low, and you can actually see, I think it's maybe Aka van der Merwe next to him, Tuilagi's shoulder and head are at Aka's waist. So, you know, this isn't like he's arrived upright and dipped and Tommy Allen's dipped. He's arrived in a perfect tackle position. If Tommy Allen is stood up, he's getting hit in the stomach, which is kind of exactly the behaviour that you want to encourage. So I don't think what you should then be doing is saying to someone, okay, what you've got to do is you've got to try and tackle Tommy Allen here, because obviously the nature of the game is that when he catches you, tackle him. But what you need to do before you tackle him is make a massive contingency plan that he's going to land on his knees. And therefore, your only option to tackle him at that point is to do what Luke Cowan-Dickie does and dive at his ankles. And that is a very, very effective way of not hitting anyone in the head ever. But it is also incredibly dangerous in its own right, because the amount of grief Luke Cowan-Dickie gets on Twitter from the same people for that tackle technique is insane. Well, it's a lot, basically. I don't know whether it's insane. It's probably a valid conversation about whether it's safe or not. But that's the only option. And I think there's a lot of people who haven't played rugby at this level who are allowed to comment on this. That's the nature of Twitter. It's one of my main gripes with it, you know, that everyone's opinion is valid. And that's fine. But if your opinion is saying what a professional rugby player should do in a professional rugby environment, having never, ever even come close to it, then it should be qualified by that. And it isn't, you know, it's just, okay, that's, I think Manu Tuilagi should have got lower. And therefore, he needs to be cited. Listen, Wayne Barnes is a top international ref and made the call on the field, rightly or wrongly. I think cold light of day, you look at it again. We're obviously recording this on Monday morning, so it's cold light of day, cold light of day. You know, we've removed ourselves via TV and then we've removed ourselves. I mean, we'll never remove ourselves from our Sale bias, but, you know, don't listen to this podcast if that's what you're after. I think it's the right call, and I think if it does get cited, which I'll be surprised if it does, then I think they'll probably end up coming to the same conclusion, because I think you look at where Manu is, you look at his body shape, and there's very, very little he can do, because you have to anticipate that Tommy Allen's going to fall on his knees, which you can't. So that's my thoughts on it. I think it's massively important to train people to tackle lower and take this concussion issue out of the game as far as possible. But let's be very clear, you are never going to remove head contact from this game entirely. You can reduce it, but you can't remove it, because at some point someone will knock their head on something. You know, someone might knock their head on someone's knee. Someone, you know, will fall over and hit the head on the floor, or, you know, snap their head back after a big tackle. So you can't remove it entirely, and therefore that's where this falls for me. This falls in the very unfortunate, but everyone's done the right thing. You know, Tommy Allen has fallen down, dipped his height unintentionally by falling on his knees. Manu is arriving low, has put a load of power into the tackle and has made contact with the head. So, yeah, if it's cited, I'll be massively surprised. I think that it would be very, very harsh. But I am a Sale fan, and I'm open to being told I'm wrong. Unfortunately, it's only us two here, so it sounds like we're going to echo chamber this. I think there was another question about whether he wrapped his arms. I thought he was wrapping. I think you see this quite often with Manu, that he tackles, it looks like he hasn't wrapped because the player goes backwards at, you know, 100 miles an hour. So I thought that as well. But, yeah, again, I think it's one of those. It's never going to get a consensus on this, are you?
I think you're so spot on with the point that you made about the fact that we're in a perfect world asking tacklers to adjust their tackle height to the appropriate level, still make a big impact because obviously we're not removing tackling from the game, but also have a contingency plan that you can action within a split second in case the player trips over his own shoelaces and starts to fall or drops the ball and goes to lean forward to reach for it. I think that's spot on. Like you can't adjudicate for that. And I think that's why the refereeing decision and the process around it was just spot on from Wayne Barnes, because it's clear as day. But unfortunately, you know, we've seen instances before where a player spilling the ball forward and going to reach for it is deemed as not having sufficiently, you know, lowered themselves to mitigate the potential foul play that obviously the referee is there to discuss.
Yeah, can I just say on that point, Hugo Monier in commentary said something about, oh, well, Ben Earl got a red card for something similar the other day, which I was then shouting loudly at the television in Hayward Road Stadium that Ben Earl card got overturned by a sighting panel and he was free to play again immediately. So that was absolute nonsense on the commentary. So we can't go, what about that decision that we said was wrong the other day? Because that's now inconsistent with that decision that was wrong the other day. Well, it's because the decision the other day was wrong. So, you know, this is why you shouldn't have former players commentating or refereeing their teams, but that's a separate conversation.
And just on the wrap in the arms element as well, So the reason why there isn't a suggestion of a wrap is because when the impact is made, Tuilagi's realised Allen has dropped the ball and has basically dived for it onto the ground. So he turns his back. Like when the contact happens, like Tuilagi is like facing away from the side on camera because he realised that you can't make the tackle anymore because Allen's about to hit the floor. So. Just a bit of a non-issue, but you know, it gave us something to talk about for 5 minutes. I suppose if nothing else, but I get why people are a little bit aggrieved about it, but it just seems like a bit of a non-issue, and I do wonder how long it's going to be before that nuance of a player who makes head contact when he stood up, when the ball carrier stood upright, gets a red card. Is acknowledged as that's the issue, not when a player is tripped just as the other player's gone to make contact with him and has accidentally hit his head. Like, it does feel like we are going in circles on this, and I don't know whether it's next year or 3 years, 10 years, whether or not it'll ever happen, but we are, I think, encouragingly starting to see a bit of a pattern in terms of when head contact is considered foul play and when it isn't, for the most part. But then you still get, unfortunately, incidences like Owen Farrell against Gloucester, where that is the sort of tackle they're trying to get out of the game because he stood upright and the other player stood upright. So we're making progress, even if it, unfortunately, as evidenced by this weekend, isn't as quickly as we'd like. The good news is we're going back into Europe next week, where there's never any contentious decisions between the different standards of refereeing and also how they broadcast their games. I know that's always a hot topic of conversation when you've got the French TV directors. But Sale have arguably the biggest game on their calendar for, the last 10 years, 20 years, with the calibre of opposition who are coming to visit our slice of Manchester on Saturday. That is, of course, Toulouse, the second of Sale and Toulouse's back-to-back series as part of this Champions Cup format. Alex, I obviously don't live in England anymore, and for the most part haven't regretted my decision to leave, but it is weekends like this that I really feel homesick, to be perfectly honest, because the idea of going to the AJ Bell Stadium on a Saturday afternoon and being able to watch Sale go up against Antoine Dupont, Roman Antomac, that bevy of international rugby stars that Toulouse have on their squad list. You know, these are the days that you sort of dream of or at least look forward to. on the calendar. So I don't want to talk too much about the Steelers team because we spent a lot of time talking about them a couple of weeks ago when we were quite rightly beaten by them in France. But I guess maybe on a broader point, you know, this is to me what the kind of European Champions Cup is supposed to be. It's supposed to be matches between the best teams in Europe and opportunities to see some of the very best players in the world play on your home ground. So what does a game like Saturday sort of mean to you as a Sale fan?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that it's kind of what you want to get into the tournament for, isn't it? You know, you never want to get... If you get into the Heineken Cup, you don't want an easy draw, really. Or you didn't used to when it was the pool games. Now it's a bit different because of the format and that kind of thing. But when it was a pool of three other teams that you were going to play, you wanted the best teams because, you know, especially as a Sale fan, you think, well, I'm not going to win it, so I don't need an easy group. I just want to go to some interesting places and play some interesting teams. And you're right, seeing that, you know, seeing Antoine de Pont and Roman Smack live, assuming they play, which they may not, knowing French teams travelling away, but hopefully they will, is a massive, massive privilege, isn't it? You know, I'm probably never going to see them, well, I don't think I'm going to see them live again, unless I go to a, you know, trying to get tickets for an England-France game is bloody hard as it is, and, you know, trying to get from Manchester to London at the moment is impossible. So, you know, this is kind of, especially, as you say, for a Northern team and all that kind of conversation about how the North is a bit left behind by rugby union generally and by the RFU, it's a lovely way to, you know, we've earned the right to have Antoine de Pont and Roman Antimat play at the AJ Bell, and it's lovely to kind of have that and know that that's, you know, entirely justified and to see them in that stadium where you've seen Sale so many times and where you've seen loads of players play, but to kind of welcome a team like that is really exciting. And I think it'll be a really, really good game. I think it'll be, you know, I think the teams were actually, I actually didn't hate the Toulouse Sale game in the reverse. I know we got battered, so probably should have done, but I think it was an enjoyable game. I think it was entertaining. I think both teams played well, and I think we'll see that again, hopefully. So that's exciting. And, you know, we've seen a great quality of team, and hopefully with the kind of home advantage switched, it might be a little bit closer this time as well. Obviously, they're still a fantastic team, and you know, to beat them would be outstanding. And I could see us doing it in, you know, a rare event, but I'm not going there with that expectation. I think it is, as you say, you know, just this is great. This is European rugby. This is top level and very exciting. And I think actually both teams we've played this year, I know that Ulster, unfortunately, when we played them, hadn't really turned up. And obviously, there was a lot of travel issues they faced as well. But just playing Ulster is quite exciting, having never played them before. And it's the same with Toulouse. It's just the game is innately exciting regardless of what goes on the pitch or, you know, whether it's a free phone game or not. It's just the build-up and that kind of, you know, this is, as you say, the top teams in Europe and the top players in Europe. So, yeah, it's really, really exciting. Hopefully it's a good game. It's a bit of a shame that it's on at the same time as the Manchester Derby because I think we could have really pushed this, and hopefully people still will come to just to see Antoine de Pont and Roman Tamak and whoever else in that Toulouse team. But I think it's a massive opportunity for Sale because the eyes of the rugby world will actually be on this game, partly because of Antoine de Pont and Roman Tamak. But I think there's a great story here that, you know, Sale Sharks, Northern Club, second in the Premiership, having a great season. Everyone loves Al Sanderson, so the media will be all over it. And if we win, it'll make massive waves. I don't think we will. I think we'll probably just lose, but I think it'll be tense and exciting, and I think I'll probably swear at the referee a few times. So, yeah, I mean, it's just such an exciting, and you are right. It's that game. It's the game you kind of buy the season ticket for, isn't it? It's the game you want to come down for. And that makes it so much more exciting. And it's why the Champions Cup, I think, really should be three home and three away games because, you know, you want this level of fixture and you know, if you earn the right to be in this competition by finishing wherever in your league, you want to then kind of justify that with some proper games against proper teams. So, no, I am genuinely really excited for it. I think it'll be a great game. And either way, it's a lovely game as a Sale fan, because I think you go into it thinking, well, we probably won't win this, but it's going to be a good day out regardless. And then, you know, it's win-win from there, isn't it?
Well, that's it. And you even just think about it from the business side of things. You know, Sale have done their share for Premiership Rugby. They've been one of the best teams in the league the last couple of years. They've, like you said, they've earned their place at the top table in Europe. And, you know, from a business perspective, like you said, the scheduling with the Manchester Derby is awful. But I appreciate, you know, it doesn't seem like the club has much say in that. But you just think, you know, the fact that Sale, who gets, you know, 5,000-6,000, you know, to see us play Newcastle at home, for example, now have the opportunity to potentially bolster that figure to the 8,000-10,000 mark, because you've got a tentpole team coming in. You've got marquee names coming in. And the fact that we've never played them before, or even, you know, if you play them like once every 4 or 5 years, you know, this will almost certainly be the only time you'll see Antoine Dupont at the AJ Bell until he signs for us next season. You know, this is your only chance to see Roman Unsamak, you know, play in Manchester, assuming that they play. So just, you know, from a club perspective, you know, we know that, you know, they will have been very happy when that draw got made, because, you know, you're trying to position yourselves in an incredibly busy sporting market in Manchester. If you can turn around and say, all right, we know the Manchester Derby's on, but if you're not that big into football or you haven't got a ticket, how about coming to see the player that everyone reckons is the best rugby player in the world turning out on the weekend? Like, it's just little things like that. So I'm really interested to see, obviously, what the crowd figures end up being like. It looks like it'll be, you know, a really sort of raucous atmosphere. And just how good to see, you know, Sale go up against a team like Toulouse at home, I think is really exciting, and you know, that's why you send your best team, you know, away to Bath to pick up wins, because it means you get days like this. So I think it would be a really good celebration, hopefully, of where the club has been so far, even if, again, based on the team that Toulouse sent to Munster in their other away game so far in this year's competition, you would anticipate that a defeat is more likely than not. So I guess on that, Alex, unless you've got anything else to say on the Toulouse game, we should do some predictions.
Yeah, absolutely. Sod it. I think Sale are going to win the 25-20. I think I've lost my mind, but I'm getting carried away. We've had two good results in a row.
I assume that's if Toulouse rest all their best players.
No. Toulouse are going to play all their best players and we're going to win 25-20. End of the conversation.
No, fair enough. Well, if you do see Nick Schoner outclass Cyril Bai, you know, in the scrum for 80 minutes, you know, fair enough. I think I have to bring this conversation back to reality a little bit. I think Toulouse will still do the business, but I think it will be a lot closer. I've got Toulouse winning 35-25, assuming the weather conditions are okay. You know, I think we'll go out and have a really good crack at it, and it's a shame that we don't necessarily know if someone like George Ford is going to be available, you know, for this game, because again, I think that would just kind of add to the sort of sense of occasion that you'd get when we've got our absolute full strength squad out. But I think even with, you know, missing Rafi and missing George Ford, this team is in such good form at the moment. It's playing so well and so cohesively. I think we'll give it a really good go, and that's a really encouraging thing, nonetheless. So that's the pod for this week. Thank you to everyone for listening, and obviously sending us clips of very angry people on Twitter talking about the Manitou Alangi hit. I didn't realise people cared that much to be filming the TV screen and like freeze framing it. But hey, whatever you want to do with your Sunday, that's fine by me. Alex, before we go, anything else you want to touch upon this week?
I think we should just congratulate North West Rugby in general, but Sale FC obviously won on Saturday, a bonus point win that keeps them at the top of the league. And then Coldy, what have you done? They've broken the internet themselves. An absolutely massive win over Ealing at home, ridiculous win for a side that came up last season. So yeah, massive congratulations to them as well. So yeah, a really, really strong weekend for rugby in the North, because, you know, you look at where it was 5-10 years ago and where it is today, and those three sets of results, you know, Sale FC securing top of the league, Caldy beating top of the Championship, and Sale obviously securing second in the Premiership. It's massively encouraging. So yeah, well done to all, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. So on that very positive note, have a fantastic time at the Toulouse game, everyone. It's going to be a massive occasion. Here's hoping the good run of form for Northwest Rugby will continue with the win over the French.